So with the 2020 onset of 2020 and having had several, dozens of months under the wake of various state capture inquiries, many South Africans kind of wish that we could start to see some kind of conclusive bringing to book of people who took part in state capture. Well, today sees the first court case in the country's attempt to recoup some of the lost millions that were lost to corruption. You might remember last year, President Ramaphosa set up a special tribunal to deal with these cases and fast-track them. The first of these begins in Booysens Magistrate Court today. The tribunal is specifically hearing a preservation order application against Khosi Lekabe, the former head of Johannesburg's State Attorney's Office, and deals with allegations of irregularities to the tune of 34 million rand. Now, it seems like a small amount, but the intention and the step in the right direction is important. Legal journalist writing for Business Day and the Financial Mail, Karen Morn, joins us to get the full detail on this story. Good morning, Karen. Welcome back to Breakfast with Rifilwe.
Thanks for having me.
Thank you. We're always grateful for your insight because it's granular, it's very detailed. Please, won't you help us understand the actual irregularities that are being alleged in this case?
Well, remember there was a whole-scale investigation of the SAU around, the State Attorney's Office. And the State Attorney's Office is incredibly important because it will govern how the state responds or deals with litigation launched against it. Everything from, I know, the health department where someone goes into a state hospital and, their child is supposed to have an operation and instead, the wrong limb is amputated, that
right.
kind of thing, the child dies, those kind of litigation. So the state attorney has a huge amount of power to be the person that selects the lawyers and the advocates that will represent the state and deal with the case. Now, there have been allegations that essentially what's been happening is that, there's been cases that should have been settled, have not been settled, that counsel have been briefed for, 30,000 rand a day and been paid for, been paid for these cases where it's not entirely true that they've done this work. And there are really questions about why these matters have not been settled. So there's been this kind of mire of suspicion over this. We know now that the head of the state attorney's office has now been, facing the prospect of having his government employment fund pension seized because the SIU seems to believe that they can show that at least in a civil context, potentially even in a criminal one, he bears some kind of responsibility in this. And that is really what this preservation order application is today. It's about saying, we believe we have a case that this person is responsible through acts of omission or commission, and we believe that this pension fund should be frozen until the finalization of these proceedings against him so we can recoup this money or some of this money from him should we be able to make our case.
Right. Now, would that be, I was going to say, so are they holding on to that to hopefully offset the 34 million rand of irregular spending?
Yes, I mean, the SIU in some of its other cases, and this is of course not to do with the tribunal, but for example in the Holland Kandler debacle, they pursued litigation of over 100 million rand against the Kandler architect who had actually been paid in the region of 16 million. So sometimes what we've seen with the SIU is trying to blame one individual for an entire mess of stuff that's happened and going after that particular individual. I don't know if that pathology is going to replicate itself in these cases, because obviously the argument that can then be made that it's going to be very difficult to link one individual to a whole bunch of spending that they necessarily did not fully have control over. And even if you do, how are you going to recover over 100 million rand from someone who got paid 16 million rand? So I think that's one of the issues that we'll see playing out today.
And is there any further recourse we can expect against Lekabe? You did mention the potential for criminal action as well.
Yes, I mean, obviously that's the question. If you're saying that this person was involved, if there's, for instance, if there's some allegation of corruption, if there's an allegation that these things were done fraudulently, that people were, that there was some element of fraud that he can be proven to be, have participated in, then absolutely, there will be criminal cases undertaken. But the strength of the SIU and the tribunal is that, it gives them the ability to utilize civil processes in a way that will, not necessarily have them beholden or waiting for a criminal process in order to pursue a person who's responsible. And we feel where it's very important as well is that this comes in the wake of the Auditor General also being given special powers to go after government employees who may have been complicit in irregular expenditure. So we've had this culture of impunity, and I think Ronald Mamula referred to it before, where, we know that the Auditor General expressing huge levels of frustration with massive levels of irregular and ruthless, wasteful expenditure, no paper trail, no adherence to the Public Finance Management Act, Municipal Finance Management Act. And when he highlights these things, nothing happens to anyone. There's now a shift where government employees, there will be debates about whether this is the completely right way to go, but where they are directly in the line of fire, whether it's the Auditor General going after them and saying, you face the prospect of litigation, you face the prospect of disciplinary action, or the SIU saying, we will go after you for this money that you have signed on the dotted line for if we find that there was anything potentially suspect of it. What that kind of messaging will do within a government which unfortunately has in many instances, spending has been defined by a complete lack of accountability and total impunity for anyone who is involved in any kind of problematic conduct in that regard.
I mean, Karen, insofar as, for example, those of us who are directors in the private sector are held to fiduciary duties and now personal liability as directors, surely this is the public sector equivalent and should carry this kind of weight.
Well, this is the exact point. This is the attitude that's now being taken. I mean, we know Shamila Batoy has spoken about the cancer of corruption, but in many ways, this is about a cancer of impunity. I mean, there's a direct link, even in ordinary common sense human conduct, with people who, if they know that there's a strong police presence in an area, are arguably less likely to engage in conduct that is criminal or is, in problematic. It's the same thing. If you are aware as a government employee that there are very strict levels of adherence in terms of, adhering to the provisions of the Public Finance Management Act, the Municipal Finance Management Act, that when you sign a document or you are putting your signature to everything, you need to be very, very aware of what's happening. You need to be able to justify it. There needs to be a paper trail, et cetera, et cetera. Then you are very much more likely, especially with this kind of case playing out in the media, to say, listen, if someone just hands you a document and says, do X, Y, Z, that you're going to be far more likely to say, no, I need to know what's going on here.
Yes.
And that is a culture that's needing to be encouraged. Remember that we are in an austerity environment. Government spending is getting cut every year, 6%, 7%, 6%. We know the health sector, the education sector is being stretched, and it is the poorest of the poor that are the most vulnerable, that are struggling the most. And in the context of that, misspending of government money, whether it's criminal in terms of criminal culpability or whether it's just mismanagement of an irregular expenditure, that has direct impact on ordinary people who rely on the state for the provision of services.
And
so it's not a bloodless crime, and that's why these kind of measures are so pivotal to addressing that.
And it must carry consequences of the heaviest form. Karen Warren, thank you very much for that detail on this case that kicks off today in Boysen's Magistrates Court. We're hoping to see excellent results in that regard. Karen Warren is a legal journalist writing for Business Day and Financial Mail, and obviously always has really great detailed insight on these cases.